All right, and welcome to The Matthew Aaron Show. I am Matthew Aaron, www.thematthewaaronshow.com, at Matt Aaron Show on Twitter, Matthew Aaron on Facebook. Caesar Marconi's also on Facebook, if you choose so to talk to him. Oh, by the way, I do want to give a shout-out, I haven't in a while, to our other guy who does all the backstage stuff for the show. And that's Pat Tobias, who just has been doing a great job with booking guests and working on some other things, and I couldn't be happier about that. So thank you, Pat. You know what? I have a phone call right off the bat, but I think I'm going to take it. Hello. You're on the Matt Aaron Show. Is this Steve?
This is Steve Weirich here.
What's going on, buddy?
Oh, you know, same shit, different toilet.
Let's catch up for our listeners at home. Steve, talk to me, brother. What's going on? Let's update our listeners on Steve Weirich.
Well, actually, as of a few hours ago, I'd been talking with a Polish television production company in Chicago here.
Where do you have to meet the Jolly Inn?
this was all on the email up and up, but they wanted the posting said they wanted a TV editor. So I go, yeah, sure, what the hell, why not? The email I get back, do you speak any Polish? Like, you know, they don't want to know about the job. Do you speak any Polish? I write back, well, I can learn Polish if that's going to give me the job. So all you youngsters, take notes. if they want you to speak Polish, you're going to learn some Polish.
What did they say to you about learning the Polish? Did they give you, like, a book?
No, well, I kind of ignored that question and said, how much live broadcast production do you have? Like, how much experience do you have? And I just kind of ran down my experience and then haven't heard back yet. But I've never had, like, just kind of all over the board email questions. I've never really had that before. But, you know, hey, Polish, English, you know, Swahili television production company, you know what? Hey, I'll speak whatever they need me to speak.
Well, I don't think our listeners know, Steve, but you had to take a break from California, if you will, thanks to Mother Government. And
I had to kind of skateboard my way east, if you will.
But I want everyone to know that you're still in the loop. You're still on the up and up. You're still a part of the program. You're still doing things. So talk to me a little more about what's going on with you. You're applying at Polish production companies. Which, by the way, I see a foreign Oscar in your future.
Oh, yes. Of course. Well, you know.
Film, and when your ass walks there, they're going to be like, what?
Absolutely. Every day I'm hustling, as the kids say. I'm back here. I work at a bar now as well. A good friend of the show, Anthony Giuliano, saw me one evening. And,
big fan of Anthony's, yes.
We had a full house moment. We hugged and shot the shit for a little bit. And,
Anthony's,
you know,
always good for a full house moment.
He is. He is really good for and Anthony's a saint because I was covered in grease and shit and, you know, all sorts of grime from cooking. And, he brought it in for the real deal, so...
All right. Well, that's good. That's good. Yeah. And you told me you are writing a little book-ski.
Yeah, I'm writing a memoir from just like from my pizza delivering days. It kind of starts then and then just kind of goes till about, probably like my stint in Los Angeles. And, you know, because I've always, you know, I've had people say, oh, man, you worked a third shift, you drove a cab, you delivered pizzas. Write that stuff down. People want to buy that. So I'm like 60 pages in, which, let me tell you something, I bitched and moaned about 40 pages for scripts, 60 pages.
Yeah, writing a book's not easy, huh, pal?
No, it's not. So, I'm working on that. I've got this lady friend of mine, her name, actually, she's on Twitter, and I'm going to tell her I've plugged her Twitter page.
Now, wait, is this officially a – I thought you were talking about the GF. Because I hear you got a GF.
I do have a girlfriend.
And let me tell you, the horns were buzzing when you posted on Facebook. I got like three text messages in 10 minutes.
Yeah, I do have a girlfriend. That happened also. It's weird. Okay, well, I'll have to rewind a little bit on the book topic. I've had a few just random people follow me on Twitter, and I usually will talk at them. And one was this woman. She's a writer. She's an indie author. Helps people out. Helps people market their books. And so she's like, we have mutual friends, and you said something really funny to that friend. So I want to be your friend, and you know that led to that. The girlfriend thing just happened. Like a week or so ago. I don't know.
Where'd you guys meet?
Mutual friends. Just at a shindig.
A little shindig, and then what was the first date? I want you to share where your first date was located.
Well, it was a double date, and
explain that too.
It was a double date at Hooters.
Oh, nothing.
Her brother and her brother's girlfriend, and me and her. We had a little. We had a little meal at Hooters, so
you
I
have
got the wings.
You have some wings. You have a couple of Zimas. How's the night?
What's up?
How's the night end? How's it go?
Oh, the night ended.
I love part of the story that you told me about proper manners, if you will.
Oh well, you know, end of the night. Just she kind of laid out the groundwork as far as. Horizontal town goes, and basically 3 months. I wait 3 months for any kind of hinging, any of that business. Peck on the lips here. I feel like I'm talking to Chuck Woolery over here.
She asked you, didn't she ask you why you didn't go in for the real deal?
Oh, she did it. Yes, she did.
And
ask
what
that.
I love this response.
I just told her I had manners. I'm like, I got manners.
You also said something that I think was very, very poignant. You said, look, if I make that move on you, I'm like, repeat what you said in that text to her. Because I think this is...
Oh, jeez. I don't know that I want to do that.
You got to do it. It's great.
I'm getting all red in the face about it.
Come on, man.
You do it because I'm too red in the face already.
All right.
Already.
Well, Steve told me. Now you could correct me if I'm wrong about the wording here. I'm paraphrasing, but he basically said, "Look, if I go in for it, it's like I'm feeling you up and I'm being inappropriate. If you go in for it, it's all good."
Well, that's exactly. But I'm like beat red here. Like if you're wearing a red shirt. Or if you're, if you're at Coney and there's some chili around, I'm about as red as that at the moment. I've had enough women get ticked off at me where it's like, not gonna. And her brother was waiting anyways.
Was he watching?
Probably. I was parked way far away from them on purpose, by the way.
Yeah,
and
the usual.
And, well, yes. I need my exercise. So we walked back to my car, and then, it's real, I'm real 1950s, about it, and, I didn't know, I didn't want to screw things up, and I'm not a cool guy to go in for the kill,
I think all good guys are like that, where they're like, it's the first date, if I make a move, I kind of look like a scumbag, maybe.
Now, can I give you a follow-up, though?
Absolutely.
Because I saw her, probably the day after or something like that. That goodnight kiss, let me tell you, that was a little French, that goodnight kiss. Because I knew I could. So I'm like, No nervousness.
So all you needed was the green light.
Oh, absolutely. And I told her, permanent green light. Always the green light on my end.
The real deal at that point.
Oh, yes, absolutely. But, yeah, she's real, And I'm not. Come on, let's be honest here. Anyone who knows me knows I'm pretty patient in that department to begin with. So
right. Well,
I feel like it's like a marathon. If you can wait it out, hey, I am the prize.
I've always said I'm going to wait it out, and that just never works that way. I get the most action I get in any relationship on the first date. It's all downhill from there. It's all downhill from there. It's like, all right, Matt. I fucked you. It's not happening again, but buy me a lot of shit. and take me to dinners, would you?
Yeah. Well, you know. I'm going to try and change that. You know, it's like, God, what's it like?
I know, well, you're like a love guru. I'll go to you from now on.
Well, appropriately enough, as appropriate as this is for 2012, me and the women are like leap year. It happens every 4 years. So, you know, I don't want to screw that up, you know. Come on, if I got to wait another 4 years, come on.
Hey, it's better than some guys we hang out with. They're more like lunar eclipses.
Yeah, no, it's very true. I will say the outpour on the internet, I was a little verklempt and shocked, but a good shocked. But I'm like, oh, all right.
Yeah, everyone's like, Steve's got a girlfriend? What the
fuck? Man, I actually had someone asked me, they go, are you kidding? Is this a joke?
Well, yeah, because once you get a girlfriend, all the guys are like, what are we doing wrong?
Oh, yeah, and she's taller than me and pretty good-looking, to be honest. It's weird.
Hey, as long as she doesn't look anything like you or me, that's
good. No, she does. She's thin. She's svelte, as I should say.
Oh, wow. You got a thin one?
Yeah, I mean, she's not, like, super thin. I won't break her or anything, but...
Just keep her on top. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah. Well, yeah, I figured that part out. I've had enough... you know, sexual fumbles to realize that part. Sexual follies is what I was going for.
Yes, our sex lives are like a Laurel and Hardy.
Yes, absolutely. Well, or mine's sometimes like a Ziggy. There's complaint lines and what have you.
By the way, do you want to help me wish a happy birthday? First of all, to Graham Nash, who I opened the show with. With the song Chicago, but wish me a happy birthday to Shelley Leibowitz, would you? Happy birthday, Shelley, from me.
Happy birthday, Shelley.
Caesar and Pat and the rest of the show, Lee and Nick and whoever else works on this thing. And happy birthday, Shelley Leibowitz. Not a day over 40.
No. Yes. Happy birthday, Shelley. Not a day over 40. And he looks better than both of us, and he's...
Oh, he's getting laid more than both of us, too. Well, maybe not you now.
I was going to say soon. Who knows? I'll leave it up to a coin flip chance.
You got to make sure you keep the show updated on when you get laid. Because I need all the details of that.
Yeah. I was going to say, yes, I will. You know, you need some comedic relief. So anytime I hit one out of the park.
Are you saying Lee's not enough comedic relief?
Oh, well, you know, when he has sex, he will be comedic relief. But until then, no, I'm kidding.
Oh, Frank Grillo from the Gray and Warrior is going to be on in about, I'm going to call him in about 10 minutes, and Bruce Fretz is going to call an amen. Steve, I wanted you to stick around and say hello to Bruce, because I called you the other night, and we caught up, and I'm like, I feel like Steve has not been talking to our buddies.
Yeah, I hadn't a whole lot.
Off the face of the earth.
Yeah, you know, I felt like I had to do some catching up, some hustling, some work type. You know, I got into a work mode. You know,
hey, you're
like,
gonna be working for the Pollocks. I mean, the Pollocks.
Oh, I wish. I really hope that job pans out. That'd be awesome.
I do too. There's nothing better than filming, and then that buffet table's got to be amazing. I mean, we're talking hotchkeys, pierogies, and sauerkraut, and sausage.
I put on my resume, food is not a form of payment. I'll take PayPal, but no glumpkeys or anything like that. So.
Oh, well, maybe they'll pay you in food stamps.
Well, you know, I could join the club. I could take a number with that. Although with Illinois, let me tell you, Illinois' food stamps, that's like me bouncing a check. I don't know that I would trust those food stamps.
You know, they have a program out in California, and you can actually use it at most fast food places even.
Yes, you can. I remember we would eat it like Jack in the Box, and it would say, you know, Link or whatever accepted. Yeah.
Yeah,
the old EBT, oh, that's encouraging. But you know what? Let me tell you. I'm not really one to decide that kind of thing, I suppose.
So what else do you got going on? Are you following any of the news? Did you see Donald Trump endorse Mitt Romney today?
I did. I threw up a lot about that. I mean, well, it didn't shock me. I just was grossed out.
Well,
like, of course.
You know, Donald used to rip on Mitt all the time.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he used to rip on him. Let me see. I think I got some quotes here that I've been using and pulling up on and blah, blah, blah. I wasn't in love with the job he did in Massachusetts. He wasn't popular. He was a one-term governor, and the Romney care was obviously not a good situation. He walked away from with some money from a very good company that he didn't create. My net worth is many, many, many times Mitt Romney. Holy cow.
Wow.
Who has the bigger dick? That's what that sounds to me.
Yeah.
Donald and Mitt were whipping him out.
Yeah. They're sword fighting at Wrigley right now.
What a perfect twosome, though. Maybe Mitt, like, hey, Donald, when I win, I'll make you VP.
Yeah. That's not outlandish.
No, that's Money, Inc. from back in the WWF days.
Oh,
that's
God, million
and IRS.
Yeah, well, who's Virgil? Are they gonna have a Virgil?
I don't know if they know any Virgils.
Hey, the real Virgil isn't a very nice man, all right?
No, my dad called me yesterday. He's like, I watched your guys' Nasty Boys interview. They're fucking crazy. And then it reminded me of Virgil, who basically wanted us to pay him thousands of dollars for an interview.
Well, I guess he's a hair above Brutus Beefcake who wanted drugs.
Oh, yeah.
I'll never forget that. Well, what are you going to do for me?
What are you going to do for me?
Calm down, Brutus. I'll get you a beer.
Oh, that was fun, Comic-Con. We need to go back there sometime.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I was just telling someone about that.
That place smelled so bad.
Oh, wait, your sense of smell is so sensitive that, yeah.
It was complete BO in that place. So every fat guy that walked by, I gave the dirtiest looks to, because I know they were probably giving out the most.
Oh, yeah.
They were contaminating the place with their comic book guy BO.
And just think, a few short months earlier, all the pussy in the world with Exotica.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, what a time to be alive.
We went from a porn convention to a Comic-Con. That was night and day. That was definitely night and day. I mean, I remember at the porn convention, I had strippers and porn stars half naked on my lap, boobs in my face. Like, they were actually hitting on me and nice to me, even though I know they were full of shit. It was great.
Right.
It was great.
Right.
At the con, I had some fat guy fall into my lap, and definitely wasn't the same.
No, you had the spawn of Boba Fett falling all over you, or whatever, you know. Like, oh, jeez.
I think you're thinking Jabba the Hutt, because Boba Fett, he's a thin one, right?
Jabba the Hutt would be more appropriate, you know. Just some food for thought there. You gotta think that within like 2 months, we went from porn to nerdery.
Really quickly. We were really hot at one point. And then we're really hot in the nerd community. Which I mean that's great for ratings. And I'm sure our ratings started going through the roof with that, but not so great with boobs.
I mean, you went over so well at Comic-Con. I thought Mountain Dew was gonna endorse you. You know, just like get yourself Code Red, or I don't know the deuce. That's one thing that's new. I'm really trying to cut down on that.
On the Code Red or on Pop Period?
Pop Period.
Well, here's the problem. I cut down on Red Bull, so now I'm drinking way too much Pop.
Diet Coke?
Yeah. Why
do I need to send Tony out there limping to suggest you get a Diet Coke?
Matthew, what do you want to drink? I'd like a Coke, Tony. So you'd like a Diet Coke?
Exactly.
Tony, want a Coke? I a Coke. I hear you.
He loves you. It's all right.
Yes, he'd love me, I guess, thinner.
Yes. Well, you know. You were the sorority girl he couldn't have. He wanted you thinner.
You're on the Matthew Aaron Show. Who am I speaking with?
It's Bruce.
Bruce Fretz, how are you? Mr. TV Guide, Fretz on Film.
How you doing?
Well, we're on the phone. Steve's here as well. Steve, say hello to Bruce. You haven't talked in forever.
How you doing, Bruce?
Good. How you doing, Steve?
Oh, living the dream. Let me tell you.
I bet.
If you've been listening, you hear I'm almost into the Polish TV network here.
He applied for a job at a Polish TV network. Things are really good.
Polavision. Anyone interested? www.polavision.com.
Polavision? That sounds like a great strip club.
Oh, I hope to God it's not, because they asked if I could speak Polish.
Oh, so I wanted to have Bruce on because he really enjoyed The Gray over at fretsonfilm.com, which is Bruce's new movie review site. Real quickly, Bruce, before I call Frank Grillo from The Gray and Warrior, who's joining us, what happened with Two Cranky Guys? Update our listeners. What happened? That it's now fretsonfilm.com.
Two Cranky Guys is no more. The other cranky guy, Brett Watson, decided that he didn't want to see bad movies anymore. So after I forced him to see Twilight, he quit. So we're just friends now. We just hang out and go to good movies together occasionally, but we don't complain together about bad movies. So now I've started my own blog, fretsonfilm.com, and I don't make myself see terrible movies, which is why I get to see things like The Gray, which I really enjoyed, and wrote a review of this week that got a lot of traffic, and Warrior, which I watched on Amazon Instant Video last weekend to prepare for the Oscars with Nick Nolte's nomination, and I noticed Frank Grillo in that film, and then there he was in The Gray the same week, so the guy's on fire.
Yeah, he's on fire, and what I like about what you're doing at Fretz on Film, though, is now instead of seeing the bad movies, you write articles about why you're not going to see the bad movies. And
I
it's pretty great.
Yeah, I seem to stumble onto this formula that people like, where I just write about why I'm not seeing, you know, the new Katherine Heigl movie or New Year's Eve or, you know, some of these movies that normally I would have forced Brett to see and would have just made me crankier. Now I can just complain about them without actually seeing them, and people seem to like it, so it's a win-win.
Well, you had Brett a month longer than you should have had, because if Brett saw Bucky Larson, he would have quit that day.
he drew the line there, so.
He drew the line at Bucky Larson. Yeah, I didn't draw that line, unfortunately. I'm going to call Frank if he hasn't been listening and heard our delicious conversation between Steve and I.
It was delicious, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well,
sink your teeth into all of it, if you will.
I'll give
you some mint afterwards.
Hey, I'm happy about the girlfriend, though, Steve. That's good.
I saw that on Facebook. Yeah, the relationship. That's great.
You have to make
the Facebook official, huh, Steve?
We actually did discuss that. I'm like, now we're gonna do this. Is that the deal? And she goes, we probably could.
Discussed if it was gonna be Facebook official.
We did discuss it briefly.
Oh man, how gay do you feel having that conversation?
Well, I felt like I would have been manlier at Lilith Fair, but you know, gotta take one for the team, right?
All right, I'm going to call Frank Grillo, co-star of The Gray. We're going to talk about The Gray. We're going to talk about Warrior. We're going to talk about Death Wish, which just was announced the other day, and I don't think there's a lot out about it, so I see what I can get out of him. So let's call Frank and bring him into the show here. Frank, this is Matthew Aaron of The Matthew Aaron Show. How are you, buddy? Frank Grillo from...
Hey, Matthew. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing great, man. I'm here with TV Guide's Cheers and Jeers, man, and fretsonfilm.com, Bruce Fretz. And we wanted to talk to you about The Gray, and we want to talk to you about Warrior and Death Wish, and I'm very curious about a lot of things you're doing, because I made this comparison last week after I saw The Gray and Warrior. I said, I think you could be, in many ways, and I don't mean this in a... I think you could be a John Cazale if you could. I mean,
I can't believe you just said that. I cannot believe you just said that. I'm going to tell you something,
okay.
And I'm not blowing smoke. John Cazale is my favorite actor, and the reason why
mine
I
too.
Love him is not only is he brilliant, but he managed, and I don't know if it was by design, he managed to keep himself under the radar enough to where he could disappear into roles and not be a famous guy who was being judged on being a famous guy. And I, for my money, he ranks right up there with Spencer Tracy as far as acting is concerned. That is amazing that you said that. I take that as the highest possible compliment that anyone has ever given me.
Well, that's my opinion of you. I just think, and you know, I grew up and I act, and I really enjoyed John's work, and he was maybe my favorite actor. I just wish he was stuck around, done more. But but I got to tell you, man, you remind me of him a lot,
I am flattered. I mean, I don't even know what to say to that. I am absolutely humbled and flattered by that, brother. Truly.
Well, I'm also jealous of you, so.
don't be, because I live in a very dark place.
Not for long, man.
Yeah, no, man.
After this week.
Yeah. Tell me about this. Okay, all right. Let's start where you began, Frank. Tell me about the climb up. Tell me about how you got involved in the business, why you wanted to be an actor, and how you taught yourself or how you got taught to do what you do.
Okay, well, you know, interestingly enough, acting kind of found me. I really was never interested in being an actor. You know, I went to college for finance. I mean, it was never really – it was something I think like all of us as young people think about being actors, because somehow in this country being an actor, you equate it to – you know, being a gypsy / royalty. I mean, there's something about it that is, you know, it's outside of what normal people do. So I always had that interest. But, you know, I literally did a couple of plays with some friends from NYU, and some guy asked me to do a commercial, a beer commercial. I started getting paid doing these commercials. And one thing led to another, and they offered me this job on a soap opera. I was in my 20s. And I took it, and that began my journey, you know, into acting. And I'll be honest with you, for the first 5 or 8 years, I didn't take it very seriously. I was getting paid a bundle of dough to be on television, and it was all kind of shits and giggles. And it wasn't until I was in my mid-30s where I said, you know what, if I'm going to continue to do this, like anything else, I have to try to be the best that I can be. So, you know.
And that soap opera was Guiding Light, right? That was Guiding Light you were on.
Guiding Light. Yeah. Right, where I met my wife, who I'm still married to me, who's a much better actress and actor than I am.
Right.
And I remain married to her today. And I'll tell you, I can tell you the turning point for me. I did a show called Blind Justice for Stephen Bochco with Ron Elzart, who, you know, for my money, is a phenomenal actor. And I learned about the process of it all. And I said, you know what? And Ron is a boxer, and I was a boxer. We kind of compared everything to fighting. And he said, you know, you can either be the sparring partner or you could be the guy. And I kind of took that to heart, and it was from there that I really started to take it seriously and explore what it was that I wanted to do with this thing.
I think that's great. I really like your honesty about it, too, because a lot of people are like, oh, I wanted to be an actor, and I trained this, and I did that. And, you know, I was even wondering to myself, I'm watching The Gray, I'm like, and then I'm watching Warrior 2, and I'm like, is this guy method? Is he not method? Like, what do you do when you take, how do you train yourself for a role, like in The Warrior where you play Frank and you're Joel Edgerton's trainer, or in The Gray where you're Diaz, who, by the way, what a great role,
I know. That was you know what? I mean, they could have put Urkel in that role and he would have killed it. I mean, Joe wrote an actor-proof role, you know, in all honesty. But, you know, for me, a guy who's, you know, I didn't come out of NYU theater and I didn't go to Juilliard. And so there's not a formal, I don't have formal training. So, you know, for me, it's about learning as much about who I think the character is as I possibly can. And whether that's me living with Greg Jackson in New Mexico for 2 months and literally shadowing him morning, noon, and night, and learning to fight and learning how to train fighters, or with Diaz going and staying at Rikers Island and starting to get the essence of what it's like to be a, you know, a real criminal, a guy who lives on the other side of convention. And I think because of my lack of understanding of training, I kind of go overboard with the research. And for me, it works. I don't, you know, maybe for other people it doesn't work, but for me, it changes my DNA a bit, you know? And
yeah,
so hopefully, and you know, hopefully it comes off on screen so that there's nothing manufactured.
Bruce, why don't you tell Frank what you thought of The Gray and ask him what you got on your mind.
Well, I mean, this is just fortuitous because I was watching Warrior last weekend for my film blog because I hadn't seen it when it came out, and
right.
I noticed you, and I'm like, who is that guy? I've seen that guy before. He's really good. I looked you up. I'm like, oh, okay, Frank Grillo. Now I got his name. He's good. And then I go to see The Gray, and there you are again. I'm like, that's the guy, you know? It's like all of a sudden he just came into being for me. But I thought you were so great in both movies. But the thing I want to know about The Gray, I know Matthew's already talked to Joe Carnahan, so he knows some of this, but I mean, that movie just looked like it was brutal to make. I mean, was it as hard to make as it looked, or was that just,
yeah,
you know, magic that you...
You know, it's funny, as the brutality of the film, as far as 20 degrees below zero and 70 miles per hour winds, and was also the beauty of it as an actor. I mean, because, and I don't want to, you know, I don't want to get all sentimental, but, you know, they dropped us in this place that was, it was really the place. I mean, it was brutal. We had 9 layers of clothing, I mean, to make sure that we can die. And so
yeah,
when you're dropped in that situation, you know, I always say where the body goes, the head follows. And basically all I knew was that I was freezing to death. So my mind convinced me that I was freezing to death. So it all becomes very real. So what started out to be the worst thing about the job really turned out to be the best thing for me.
Yeah. Well, it definitely came across on screen. I mean, you could just tell that this was not fake. You know, that you guys were really out there.
We weren't fake, man. It was. I got to tell you. And you know, Liam is 6'5", so the snow was up to his thigh or up to his waist. I'm 5'10". It's up to my chest. I mean,
yeah,
you know, I felt like I was 8 years old. But basically, all of us were the same size except for Nonzo. You know, we're all around 5'10" or 5'11", and Liam
yeah,
is gigantic. So, and we could barely keep up with the guy.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. You know, when Joe was telling me how that snowstorm's real, like all, yeah, I mean, in a way, you guys kind of luck out too, because you don't have to CGI that. You don't have to make it look worse than it was. It was bad.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny too, because I've read a couple of things. My agents have sent me things like saying, isn't this funny? Because some reviewers have actually said, well, you know, I liked it, but the CGI snow and the CGI wind was a bit much. I'm like, what? I wanted to, I would never do it, but I wanted to write back. Are you kidding me?
Don't worry. Joe will do it. You don't have to do it. Joe will do it.
Yeah, no. I know. Joe likes to get his hands dirty, but I wouldn't do it.
You know, let's do the opposite ends dirty. Okay, for instance, Bruce Fretz, quote, said it's a great freaking film. Rod Lurie, who's a buddy of mine and a guest on the show, Rod Lurie called it a masterpiece. He said it's the best film
wow,
he's seen in years. Mike Binder, who's a friend of mine, loved it, thought it
was
great.
Oh, I know Mike. Yeah.
Yeah, Mike's a good buddy of mine. And I got to tell you, man, Roger Ebert, 3.5 stars. Richard Roper, A-. Peter Travers loved it. I mean, when you hear about all these accolades, so you got people in the business like Rod and Mike who did it, and then you got critics like Bruce and Roger and Richard who also loved it. What does that do for you, that day that you read about all this or you hear about all this? What does that do for you?
You know, because I've been a journeyman actor, and, you know, I'm a guy who, you know, for the most part, I have kind of been a sparring partner as far as my career is concerned. So for me, you know, I can't pretend and say it wasn't overwhelmingly remarkable to read those things. But to me, I'm always like, I always read it with like one eye open and one eye closed and say, well, it's great. I guess it's great. I knew it was special when we were doing it, and it's so satisfying. I'm happy for Joe. I'm happy for everybody. Then I think, but for me, I don't know. Does it really change anything? Will anything really, you know, which is fine if it doesn't. You know, I'm kind of on a good run. And so I always take it with a grain of salt, and I kind of don't expect anything from it, but I enjoy it in the moment. You know, I don't discard it
right,
in any way, and I don't make light of it. And I'm like, I'm really appreciative that I'm finally in something that people, the masses, are seeing, and that we're getting, you know, such great response about. So it's, and you know what, it's a joint effort here. It's like everybody involved deserves equal accolades. You know.
You know, I was talking to Joe last week off there, and I said, Joe, this movie's going to open up at 20 mil. And he goes, from your lips to God's ears, man. And it opened at 20 mil. So when you...
That's hysterical.
Yeah, when you are like, hearing, it opened to 20 mil. Does Joe call? Are you guys like calling each other and just like really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. We're on the phone 3 days before. You know, they're talking about. I don't know much about the movie business. I'm starting to learn about tracking and marketing and all this stuff. And I kind of got a little bit of a lesson from Warrior because everybody thought it was going to be a big success and it wasn't. And so I started to understand it a bit, but I try not to get too involved in it. And so I was starting to hear, well, you know, it's tracking well, but and it will open one, but they're looking at 12 to 14. I said, well, that's not so great, but it's not so bad. And everybody's saying, no, it's going to do better. I know there's the Liam factor. They kept using the terminology, the Liam factor. And Joe said, I'm telling you, man, we're gonna break 15. We might go to 20. And that number 20 was always kind of dangling out there. And boom, you know, we hit just about $20 million, which is fantastic. I still giggle because I'm like, I can't believe I'm in the number one movie.
It's awesome. It's really awesome. And I think what makes it even more awesome is you're not in a crappy number one movie. You're in a movie.
Right. I'm not in, like, Transform. Not as crappy, but I mean, you know, this kind of spectacle, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's a real buzz movie. Yeah, the buzz on the internet from actual moviegoers. I mean, you're on Twitter, Frank. I know it. And, I barely used Twitter until I did my interview with Joe. And then when I saw the movie before I interviewed Joe, I knew I was going to start using the Twitter and tweet the hell out of this fucking thing. Because this movie was amazing. And I'm not the only one tweeting the hell out of it, man. I know. I'm in the gray in my search, and I see all the comments, man. And people are raging. Out this movie.
I know. And if you know, I've gotten such, and I started the Twitter thing a couple months ago because Open Road said you should really pursue this because it's a good way to get. I said, great, I'll do it. I love talking to people. And I started to get, like, people started to, like, send me private messages about, you know, one guy said his dad had recently passed away, and to explore those themes and those ideas about death and about, you know, faith. Like, I got this long letter from him, and he wasn't the only guy. I was like, wow. Carnahan wrote a piece of material that is touching people. I said, and look, as an actor, you know, that's kind of the best compliment you could be paid, is that you actually affected somebody for a minute. So, yeah. I mean, it's why I go to the theater. You know, it's you want to be affected. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's great.
I know what the buzz is like in L.A. I know what the buzz is like in my hometown of Chicago. Bruce, I know you and Frank are both in the New York area. What's the buzz like? What is on the streets are people saying about The Gray over there?
I think everyone's surprised at how good it is. I mean, I think, you know, the trailer looked like fun. You know, the trailer looked like, okay, you know, Liam Neeson's going to punch a wolf. You know?
Right.
And then you go see the movie and it's like deep. You know, it's like it's got really stuff to say and it's like emotional. And it kind of takes you by surprise.
I agree. I think like 85% of the people who come out of the movie have this kind of ashen look on their face. Because, you know, they've experienced something that they weren't expecting, which I think as a moviegoer is the best way to come out of a film. We are so programmed and conditioned to know exactly what we're going to see when we go into a theater. And so you're almost kind of manipulated in feeling something before you even experience the film. But with Carnahan, the way Open Road marketed this, they kind of fooled people a bit in a good way. And so for the most part, people are coming out of there not expecting Carnahan to be so deep, you know, to have all of these big existential questions. And
right.
I mean, a few guys, I went and saw the movie with my wife and my son. I have a 15-year-old, so I took them to the theater, Union Square here in Manhattan. And I sat in the back, and it was funny because I was watching people walk out. Most of them were like, we were talking about going, wow, that was so good. But some guys would walk out and go, the fuck? He didn't fight the wolf. He didn't fight the wolf. That's bullshit. And I'm like, see, I mean, those are guys who are programmed by a trailer to go see a film. So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, my mother was programmed. She called me up. She goes, but there's no ending. There's no ending.
Right.
Film. I go, there is an ending. The ending was, you know, it's the scene before he fights the wolf, or he's going to fight the wolf. That's the ending, where he's screaming at God
into
the air. That's the ending, the cherry on top's the wolf stuff. And, you know, I got to tell you, though, I'd really champion this movie, and I love your performance, and I love your work. And I wanted to talk about now working with Joe. And I also wanted to talk about the script a little bit because, I mean, you guys even have a piece of dialogue in this movie that's going to be around, I think, for a very, very long time. Once more into the fray, into the last good fight I'll ever know, live and die this day, live and die this day. I mean, people are getting it fucking tattooed on their body.
Did you see, did you see that guy tattooed on his forearm the entire thing?
Yeah.
Fucking A, he got tattooed on his body.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, I mean, that line is going to last. I mean, that is just...
Yeah.
And that's Ian Jeffers and Joe Carnahan that wrote the script, correct?
Yeah. I mean, Joe wrote, you know, and I might be speaking out of turn, but Joe wrote the poem. You know, and I know he was influenced by Shakespeare, but it's his. They're his words.
Brilliant.
And you know... As a guy, I'm sure when you hear those words, it basically summarizes what it is to be a dude in four lines. It's like, you know, that's kind of it, isn't it? Once more into the fray, I'm going to live and die in this day. Like, you think about that, and it strips everything down of sentiment and bullshit, and it's like, yeah, I mean, who am I on this day? Can I do it on this day? Like, it's that question. It's fucking cool, man.
The coolest thing in the movie, I don't know if Bruce, I don't know if you're going to agree, but the coolest thing in the movie for me was the scene where, you know, we find out what's going to happen with your character. And I wanted you to explain to me what you and Joe talked about before that scene, how it was planned out. It's a beautiful, beautiful scene.
Thank you. I love the scene myself. I did. And, you know, Joe did something wise, and he planned that scene for the end of the film. And so, you know, all the other stuff was easy for me. But I had this scene on my mind, and Joe and I would talk about it periodically while filming the movie. And it always kind of hung out there like we were afraid of it. And it's funny because on the day we were standing by that gorgeous river, and Joe and I pulled ourselves aside. We started to talk about the scene, and which is great about Joe because everything is a collaboration, and not to overuse that word, but everything is about being in the moment and about not denying or not inventing anything. It's about really truly understanding where you are at that moment. And we were standing by that river, and we were just about done with the movie, and it was such a gorgeous experience. We started to talk about our kids. And we're in our 40s, and, you know, you start to think about things differently. We started to bawl, both of us. I mean, we started to cry almost uncontrollably. And part of it was me thanking him for this opportunity and telling him how much I loved him and I admired him. And, you know, I said to him, I said, dude, I don't know how you got me in this movie. I don't know that I'll ever get a role like this again. And I wanted him to know how much I appreciated what he'd done for me. And then we started talking about our kids, and we started crying. He goes, bro, let's go do this. And that kind of set it off. And then we just got into the scene, and we did it two or three times. He never came in with the camera. He had a very strong vision of how he wanted it to look. He stayed away as if we were voyeurs. And I think, like you, as soon as I started to do it, I lost myself, and I forgot where I was, and it was really happening. And it was a beautiful, for me, I don't know that I'll ever be able to top that moment because it was.
I got
to
see it, though, Frank.
Whatever came out, it was that special while I was doing it.
Yeah. Well, if you keep working with Joe, you may be able to top that moment because that guy has some William Friedkin in him, man. He takes some real moments. He takes some real moments. And I got to tell you, everything I've heard about how he's directed actors is just, it's great. He's not afraid to get personal with you guys, and he's not afraid you guys open up.
He's not. He's a born leader. And by the way, he is like Robin Williams-esque as far as ideas that just flow undisturbed from his brain through his mouth. And you know, he's so brilliant. And there's a reason why guys like Liam Neeson, who for my money, is one of the best in the business, want to work with him over and over again, and give themselves over to him as a director. I've gotten to work with some pretty good directors lately, and for my money. And I love Gavin O'Connor. I mean, he's a friend now, and he's a good friend, and he's a genius director in his own right. But I got to tell you, for my money, Joe Carnahan, who writes this stuff and directs actors, he's the best. I'm telling you, he is the best. He's going to be around. he's people are going to want to work with him all the time.
I agree.
Especially after this movie, yeah.
Yeah. I was wondering, and so was my producer, Caesar. He was wondering, what is your take on the after the credits scene, Frank? What is your take? I know Joe's like, I wanted to leave it open to interpretation and blah, 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 and whatever. Cool. But what's your personal take then?
You know, for me, the film was done when they cut away from Liam running towards the wolf.
I agree.
And I didn't even know about that little Easter egg at the end. I truly didn't until I saw the movie in the final cut. And Joe said, you know what? I don't know why I did it. It was a bit of artistic indulgence. I felt like I wanted to do it. It doesn't mean anything. And I said, look, you're the filmmaker. I said, do I think you needed it? No, I don't. I really don't. Is it interesting to see it there? It's almost become, what word am I looking for? It's just kind of a little something to make you smile now. Like it's not that it's too much, because I don't think it is, but it's almost a little bit. It could be a little bit gratuitous if you think too hard. Like it's.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't even know how to articulate it. I sound stupid. I know, but I don't think he needed it. I don't think it hurts the film at the same time. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, what do you feel about it?
Well, I mean, I kind of agreed with you, actually. The film ends when, I didn't even see the clip after. So when I heard about it and everything, I'm like, well, I want to go back to the theater and see this anyways. But it's not for that clip after the credits. I want to just see the whole fucking movie again, man, because it's great. And for me, the ending is, like I said earlier, it's even before Liam fights the wolf. It is when he's screaming to the heavens, and that is the ending for me. And then the wolf scene just puts me on the edge of my seat, and I'm
right.
Like, well, if he ends it here right now, it's going to be perfect. And what, I don't know, the planets aligned, and it ended right when I was on the edge of my seat. And I'm like, now's the time, do it. And he did it, and I'm like, what fucking
balls? And he did
balls?
It, yeah.
What fucking balls?
Balls. I know.
How did
you
get away with a ballsy ending like that, working with the studio? Was Open Road just really open to this?
The good thing was Open Road wasn't on board at that point. So what Joe had was all independent money, Mickey Liddell and these independent producers who put up all the films. So he really had artistic say in the matter, and like it was really up to him. The fact that he got Liam to do it gave Joe all of the clout that he needed as a director. So he was able, we did another, there's an alternate ending, you know, we kind of played with both ways, always intending to end it the way it was ended. And, I feel the same way. I said, man, that's ballsy. And by the way, your imagination is 10 times stronger than any image you'll see.
I agree.
So to imagine what happened between Liam and that wolf is far greater than what he could put on the screen, because to make a wolf that looks real that he has to fight is something that you don't, you know, you're talking about Twilight stuff now. You don't want to get involved in that. That diminishes the story. So I think he was fine ending it where he ended it, and he's got the wolf breathing at the end, and that's fun. I don't think everybody even saw it. I think a lot of people didn't even know it. So it's interesting, it's a great conversation. I'll tell you, it's a great thing to talk about at a party.
I agree. Instead of people talking about, what do you have to say, Frank, in your own words? And you're more of a diplomat than Joe, so I'll go to you about it. What do you say to these people that just don't get it and just wanted blood and guts and gore?
Yeah,
and,
it's too bad for you, but I get it. Look, some people, They operate in a very, in a one-dimensional way, and they want to see what they want to see. And, go see movies by Darren Bousman and Wes Craven. I mean, if that's what you're after, But I'm an adult man, and my friends are like you guys, are adults who want to be touched, and then, you want to be thinking. You know, listen, we live our lives on a treadmill most of the time. So if I could walk out of a film and think about it for a couple of days, well, then, I got my $12 worth.
Absolutely.
So I don't pay much attention to the other people. Like that. I feel sorry for him. I actually feel sorry for him.
I'm fat, so I didn't get that treadmill comment. So.
So, Frank, you mentioned that people expected Warrior to be a big hit, and it wasn't. And I'm wondering what your theory is as to why it wasn't. I mean, I didn't see it in the theater, and there were a couple reasons that held me back from seeing it. One was the title, which I thought was kind of generic. One was the fact that it kind of looked like The Fighter, you know, and I felt like I'd seen that already. And the other one was that it was MMA. And if it had been a street boxing film, I would have seen it. But MMA, for some reason, kind of turned me off. I mean, do you think those were some of the factors that kept people away?
I think those are three of the reasons. I think they're, in no specific order, I think those are the top three reasons. I really do. You know, the other thing is you don't have a Liam Neeson to put on the poster. And although Tom Hardy and Joel Edgerton might have a little heat in Hollywood, they're not stars yet, you know, and you don't know if they will be. To put Joel Edgerton and Tom Hardy on a poster and put the name Warrior, which, by the way, the studio wanted to change in their defense. They didn't want to put them on a black and white poster. When I drove past those posters in L.A., I said, you know what, that looks like a fight, like it's a real UFC fight. And although, you know, MMA might be popular with a certain demographic, it's still not the sport that boxing is. It's still not a beloved sport like boxing. And some people don't even consider it a sport. And I think, you know, Lionsgate did a terrific job with what they thought was a campaign, but I just think they got away from what the story was really about. So like you, I think the movie fell between the cracks because you didn't really know what it was.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I got to tell you, everyone who sees it, which I'm sure you hear, at least five times a day I get a phone call or a text going, hey, man, I just saw this movie, Warrior. Where did this come from? That goes to show you, look what Open Road did with this movie, with The Gray. I mean, not an easy movie to market. They pulled it off.
I think Nick Nolte getting the Oscar nomination is going to help a lot of people see it, though, because that's why I finally broke down and saw it. I was like, okay, I got to see Nolte. You know, and he was great, and the movie was great. So, you know.
Yeah, it's a shot in the arm for the film. Nolte getting nominated is a shot in the arm, because they didn't really do a big campaign for him either. I mean, it goes to show you the strength of the guy's performance.
Yeah.
Because all these people really do, they get a lot of help from the studio to get nominated. You know, I think he could win. I really think he could win.
That would be great. Oh, I would love that.
Yeah.
I thought he was fantastic. Yeah. And do you work with him again in Gangster Squad, or?
I don't work with him. He's in the film as well. It's a big cast, and, you know, our roles are scattered. It's really Gosling and Brolin, but it's just a great movie to be part of. I have great stuff with Sean Penn, and it was another one of those kind of, not you know, checking off my bucket list. You know, we have three or four great scenes together where we go at each other. So it was another one of those, man, am I doing this with Sean Penn? So
that's
it was
amazing.
Fun.
Yeah, I can't wait to see that. That's one of my films that I'm most looking forward to this year. So, all right, guys, I got to run, but it was great talking with you.
Thanks, Bruce. I'll talk to
you soon.
Hey,
brother, thanks.
Thank you, man. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, brother. I appreciate it.
All right. Talk to you soon, Matt. Bye.
All right, Bruce. I'll see you later. Frank, I got to ask you now about we were just talking about Gangster Squad, which is another movie you got upcoming, which, by the way, like you said, what a cast in that movie.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, but talk to me about Death Wish, man, because I got to tell you.
Yeah.
Like, what went into deciding Death Wish was going to be Joe's next movie? Do you know? And I know he's writing you a role. Is there anything you know about it?
Well, I'll tell you this. While we were shooting The Gray, Jules Daly, who's going to produce Death Wish with Joe, she produced The Gray, said, you know, they're looking to get this for him to redo the story, and you know, to use his Carnahan magic and kind of turn it into the next generation of Death Wish. And she said, and that's all I had heard. And then as I was doing the film, they kept looking at me saying, what are you doing in so-and-so in January? And what are you doing? And like, I don't know. They go, you know, we might do Death Wish. And he's imagining it as a two-hander. It's not just Bronson. It's two brothers. And that's as much as I know, because he really hasn't told me very much. And he said, look, if say Crow was going to be the guy, I'd want you to be his brother. You know, are you interested in that? I said, dude, yeah, I'd be interested in anything, whatever you want me to do. So that's as much as I know. And then last week it was basically greenlit, and his deal was done, and he went out and made the comment that he was writing the role for me. So, you know, I'm in, man.
now,
I guess, you know, for me, it's kind of getting to the top of Everest, brother. It's like, wow, you know, so this guy saw something in me to hire me for The Gray, and now he's wants to write me a role in this, and I pinch myself. I'm so used to disappointment that I'm like, I'm always like kind of hunched over going, all right, well, if you tell me it's not going to happen, that's okay too, you know? So,
yeah.
I
got to tell you, I read also that Joe was saying it's going to be more like the book, which I think is what Sidney Lumet and Jack Lemmon were trying to do with it at first until the movie got changed to Charles Bronson. But but at first it was going to be Lumet and Lemon, and it was going to be a story about vigilantism not being a good thing. It wasn't going to glorify it. Do you think that's a direction that this movie's going to go in more of?
I think it's closer to what you're talking about, and certainly not doing what the Charles Bronson movies did, which, you know, they were fun, and if you go back and watch them, they don't really hold up very well, but they were a product of their time. But I think he wants to do something far more interesting, which is what Lumet and had in mind for the film.
Well, you're never going to hear this out of my mouth again, but you let Joe know if he needs a rapist, I'm the guy. I'll do the Jeff Goldblum. Yeah, I mean, I just remember the original film, and I'm shocked that Jeff Goldblum and Lawrence Fishburne from the second one, I'm shocked that they, like, oh, it's got to be so hard to play a role like that and then get a career out of
it.
Yeah. Because no one knows Drake was really good.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, it's funny because Jeff Goldblum is a terrific actor, but he's always got that element of charminess about him, and I think it started with that film. Like, there's always that thing about him that I can't put my finger on it, but, you know, I don't know that I kind of trust him and, you know, his characters. There's always an element of mistrust. So it's funny. I certainly am not playing the rapist.
No. You are not playing the rapist. Now, do you know anything about if this film's also going to involve Liam Neeson? Is this like the new team of Liam and Joe?
It's a great question. I mean, I think Joe would be lucky. Certainly Martin Scorsese doesn't shy away from Leonardo DiCaprio. If you get in this business, especially if you find a formula that works, you tend to stick with it for as long as you can. And I know Liam loves Joe Carnahan. I mean, at one point he was wanted to see if Joe was available to do Taken 2. I mean, he just loves working with Carnahan. So
yeah.
I wouldn't rule that out. I certainly wouldn't rule that out.
I think that's awesome. I wanted to ask you. My mother wanted to ask you a question about The Gray. She wants to know, why did your character end up doing what he did? Why was it too much for you? Why do you take that seat on the log? She thought you should have just made it the whole time. What is your take on that?
You know, I think it's a guy who, A, is in worse shape than he lets on to be.
Right.
So I think physically he really has gone as far as he can go. But I think also what's happened is, you know, he's had a sense that there's something altruistic in what he's doing, because at some point I'm just going to become a burden to these two guys that I've grown to respect in a very short amount of time. And I think for the first time in his adult life, the guy has a selfless moment. And the other side of the coin is I really do believe something spiritual happens. He has an epiphany I think the line is something about, what am I going to do, go back to the rig, and is that going to be my life? Like, do you know, some people have something happen to them that's so traumatic that you can never imagine life as it was before.
Yeah.
And so I think part of it was that, too. Like, I'm okay to face it now. I'm okay. You know, the end is here, and I'm going to help these two guys. So it's a culmination of a few things. Joe and I spoke about it for a long time, and you know, who knows why anybody sits down to die, though, at the end of the day. But it's a great question. You know, I did Catholic radio today, and you can't believe how many,
Wait, talk about this, Frank. Catholic radio. Okay. All right. All right. All right. I'm an Italian kid from Chicago, so I know how this goes. But what could Catholic radio be like? How did this go, man?
Well, it's funny because the guy is—it's called the Catholic. He's the Catholic guy on Sirius Radio, and he's kind of like the Howard Stern of Catholic radio. He's a bit—he's a bit provocative, and you know, but you know, he wants to talk. They wanted to talk about the themes that from the Bible that kind of parallel the film, you know, which is forgiveness and faith and all that stuff, and so, but that's a big question, you know, that does a person ever have enough faith to believe that he's okay to sit down and die, which most of us don't. I don't believe that. I mean, I recently had an aunt pass away. When I tell you, Matt, that she went to church every day. She has gone to church every day her whole life. She worked for the priests in the parish. She got sick, and she knew she was dying. Do you know that on her deathbed, her biggest fear was that if her faith was for naught, was that if she was praying to no one? Like, she really believed maybe she was making a mistake. Could you imagine that?
Wow. Yeah, I
find that to be fascinating.
Well, I kind of feel I'm a lapsed Catholic myself, and I think I am a lapsed Catholic because I just don't know what to believe anymore, man. I think that was a strong part of this movie too, is for a guy like me who went to Catholic school growing up. I went to Catholic college. I mean, I did the whole gamut, man, and I just kind of, you know, I just don't know anymore, and I'm watching this movie. It really hits home.
I know, and, you know, I have three sons, right? And so because I kind of fell away from the Catholic Church, you know, the same, like right after school, after high school, I didn't get any of my kids baptized. And so now as I'm getting older, and I've tried believe me, I have explored, you know, I've explored Judaism, I've explored Hinduism, I've explored Buddhism, I've explored everything there is to explore. And it's funny because now that I come back to the Bible and to Catholicism, I'm like, you know what? Put the church aside and all the church's shortcomings, and if you see it for what it is, the spirituality of Catholicism, that kind of makes sense. So now, because of this film, I'm doing this, I'm kind of walking around, scratching my head, going, okay, what am I doing? What do I believe in? Which, again, is a great result of the movie. But I'm scratching my head because I'm a lapsed Catholic. I mean, I'm a seriously lapsed Catholic. So it's interesting. It's an interesting dilemma.
I hear you. I think that, man, but see what the questions this film are bringing up. See how powerful this film is. This is a comedy show. We've talked about this on the show, man. This is wild.
That's great.
This comes up because it's opening doors to having these conversations. You know, they always say, don't talk religion, don't talk politics. That's always the thing. And this movie kind of lets that be an okay conversation. Like, this movie opens...
By the way, what's more important to us, again, is being adults, being people who are kind of steering the world into where it's going. Like, if you're not going to talk about religion, which is kind of the catalyst to all the trouble that's going on around the world, and if you're not going to talk about politics, which is directly tied to religion, what are you going to talk about? The Housewives of Beverly Hills.
I agree, bro.
Yeah.
No. All we do is watch MSNBC around here and Bill Maher, and I'm always like, you know, man, do I watch too much of this shit?
I know.
Maybe it's good that way. But I also wanted to ask you, though, I know you have a couple projects, like you said, you're working with Sean Penn and Ryan Gosling and Jake Gyllenhaal, I think, is in one of them, and Alexander.
Yeah.
Now, as a guy who just admitted earlier that you started taking acting seriously a few years ago, in the first, like, 8 years, you didn't really take it that seriously. Are you learning anything from these guys? Do you pick anything up? And what are the things that you pick up?
You know, it's funny, you know, because the people that I have learned from, you know, are the guys like Nick Nolte and, you know, about preparation, which, you know, I box. And boxing is all about how many hours you put in sparring, you know, and I equate it to the same thing. And so now I get in, and I'll tell you, I get in with some guys who are very big names who get movies greenlit, and they're lazy, and they're not good. And so their performances are made in the editing room. And so now I can get in there, and if you want to, again, equate it to boxing, I can get in there, and I'm okay to box with any of them. I feel more than confident based on the preparation. not any God-given talent, because I'm telling you, I don't have that. It's preparation, and it's hours. I mean, if I tell you I read a script once, I read it 100 times before I get onto set. And that's what I equate, you know, being good enough to dance with these guys. You know, there's no magic. It's just a lot of hard work, which I like.
Yeah, I think you're right on about that. I think, like, you know, Nolte, he's famous for, he writes backstories on his characters in every movie he does. He'll come in with like a 30-page book.
Yep.
And
we call it the Bible. We call it the Bible. I do the same exact thing.
That's
and,
right.
You know, maybe it doesn't work for some people, but I have the Bible. I get to say, ask Joe, when he saw my script, you know, he said, dude, you look like you belong in an insane asylum. My script is covered in notes, in arrows, in, you know, there are transitory verbs. There are things that just that incite my brain. And I really, it looks like that movie with Jim Carrey where he's writing all over the walls. That's what my script looks like. And so it's just, that's the process of it all for me is to flush it out so that there's no stone unturned, so that I can feel confident that I've explored it all. Otherwise, like I said, there are guys who can step onto set and make, you know, like Robert Downey Jr. is brilliant. I mean, he's brilliant. He can do anything, that guy. And so can Meryl Streep. Daniel Day-Lewis, on the other hand, he needs a year to prepare for a film.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all different. I think each person's different about it. And I think back in the day when it was method and the Stalovsky method and, you know, whatever, they had all the different methods. I don't think it's really like that anymore. And I think people take bits and pieces from everything and they do it their own way. And I think that's kind of special in a way. You can't really teach what Meryl Streep does. You can't teach that.
No.
No,
she's touched by God. She truly is touched by God, that woman.
Yeah, she is really special. I got to tell you, I don't want to keep you on the phone all night, so I want to promote at Frank Grillo, by the way. People should follow you on Twitter. I know you have time with that program. And The Gray, which I think is fantastic. I want people to keep seeing. I mean, this is a movie you want to see twice. That's how good this movie is. You're going to want to go back and have questions answered or just see scenes again because they were so good. And I do want you to know, I really meant what I said when I said you remind me of John Cazale, man, and I think that is your future. I really do. If you keep doing what you're doing, man.
I'm beyond flattered and humbled and you know, for you to even bring up his name and for us to have this conversation, I can't tell you what that means, man. It's a little bit of like, okay. Maybe we're doing something right, you know. Maybe continue to work hard and to even to affect one person is fantastic. So I can't tell you how much I appreciate that.
Well, when you win your Oscar one day, I want you to remember I believed in you, man.
I'm gonna look at you in this. I'll look at you in the seat there. Yeah, when I win my Oscar.
I hope. By the way, we have another question that came in. They want to know what Disconnect and End of Watch is.
End of Watch is a film that David Ayer wrote and directed. It's Jake Gyllenhaal and Michael Peña, Anna Kendrick, myself, and it's basically, you know, it's an LA cop story, but it's told in a different perspective because there are cameras. Jake and myself and Michael have cameras on our bodies, and the cars have cameras, so there's different points of view. The bad guys have cameras, so it's a very interesting, way to make a film. And it's a great story. It's a beautiful story. And then Disconnect is a story about five different stories that kind of come together, and it's about the state that we're in socially with all of these electronics, iPads and computers and phones and stuff, and how we've basically all disconnected and lost a little bit of our humanity. And so there's like three or four beautiful stories that kind of come together at the end of the film. And Henry Alex Rubin, who directed the movie Murder Ball, the documentary back in the day, he directed it, and I think he did a fantastic job.
Well, I have one last question for you from myself, and that is, as a guy who just came out to Hollywood, is doing his show now, you know, but, you know, you're getting by meagerly. You lived those years. What did you do to get by? How was it for you, like, you know, when the times weren't so great? And how did you
it's a great question. And, you know, from very early on, you got to make a decision to not let the outside world really affect your inner soul and your inner spirit too much. You've got to find a way to maintain a semblance of normalcy, whether there's good news or bad news. And so you've got to create a life for yourself away from, you know, what you're aspiring to be or do, so that you can enjoy your life. Because, you know, if you go by 5 years with your hand out trying to reach something and you never do that, and 5 years go by, that's 5 years. So I always manage to, I fitness and exercise is always a big part of my life, and boxing and jiu-jitsu. I have kids, I have a wife. So, you know, I always try to balance my life out. And I'm not saying it works all the time, because when you don't get the job, you feel bad, you know, because you're being judged solely on your who you are, what you look like, and it's tough sometimes. But create a life. You got to create a life for yourself outside of what this thing is, that you're trying to do is.
And how were you proactive, Frank, about getting to where you are today? How were you proactive about getting involved with something like The Gray or with Warrior and good projects? What was your methods for that?
Well, you know, I met Joe. Joe wrote a film, co-wrote a film with Gavin O'Connor, who directed Warrior, called Pride and Glory.
Yeah.
And I got cast in that movie, and that's how I became friends with Joe. And so, you know, my idea is anybody I've ever worked with, I became kind of partners with, and I've worked a lot of jobs, and I've worked for the same people over and over again, Stephen Bochco and you know, guys like Joe and Brett Ratner. And these are people who, you know, I came, I did my job, I did it, you know, hopefully well, and I work hard and I work well with others, and I constantly stayed in touch with everybody, and I constantly, you know, was a cheerleader for them, and, you know, assuming that I was friends with them, because some people you just don't hit it off with. And it really, but at the end of the day, and it might not pay off the next day or the next month or the next year, but you need to, like any business, you know, establish relationships and maintain goodwill and be a good dude, you know, or a good woman, and create a good network of people.
I think that's awesome advice. Frank, you're the best, man, and I hope you do this again. I mean, you know, I really enjoyed having you on, man. I really did.
Anything I could ever do for you, because you've been just a great, you know, you've been a great cheerleader. The things that you've said and the things that you've tweeted, and, you know, to be such a great supporter of the film and of myself and Joe, it's just, you know, it's invaluable. So anything I can do for you, you have my phone number. Don't hesitate to call me.
I got to let you know, you two guys, I got your backs. I really do. You guys are amazing.
Thank you, my man.
A great team. And, you know, yeah, I mean, if Joe ever needs a rapist number three, I'm around.
I'm going to tell him. I'm going to tell him, brother. But really, we'll have to raise our glass one day and have a beer.
I agree. Thank you, Frank, so much. You're the best, buddy.
Okay,
I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, my brother.
All right. The Gray is in theaters now. You could follow him at Frank Grillo on Twitter. That was Frank Grillo. I'm going to bring in Lee Capreas, who walked in from work halfway through the show. I'm sorry about that, buddy. I just didn't want to interrupt anything.
Yeah, I got you.
Hold on. But we also have Steve Weirich back on the phone, too. Steve, you there?
Yes, I am. Sorry about that.
So what's going on, pal?
Tremendous interview. It was great.
Thanks.
That was huge.
Kind of inspiring, huh? Were you inspired?
Oh, yeah. Nice little kick to the slacks. No, it was great. Right. It was, you know.
Because, listen, man, Frank didn't always have a good either, man. This is like you and I talked the other night. This is a big deal.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, he was, just with the film talk and just kind of life lessons that he gave, definitely, you know, he was a little bit of a Matt Foley motivational speaker right there. Successful,
good.
You know.
So, Lee, what's going on? You walk in a little late. Show started. You missed some goodness.
First of all, Lee Cabreras, hello.
Lee Cabreras.
And let me say, I like that you don't even think that you could handle rapist number one or two.
I know.
You have to be three.
I don't want to be the guy that actually does any touching or anything.
Right.
I just want to be the guy standing there going,
you want to be the guy passively raping with your eyes.
Or the guy in Kingidia, the Charles Bronson movie, the guy that who just walks up to the chick and grabs her ass.
I was out trying to not be poor. That's what I'm trying to do. And I was working and every bullshit thing. Honestly, it's not that interesting.
Don't worry about it, man.
I'm not even gonna. It's not that. First of all, I think your ratings probably went up. secondly,
well, Steve was talking about his sex life, so they did go through the roof.
Yeah, they went through the roof. I wasn't on, well, at least that what one person would say. But there's, it's not even interesting. And I was trying to think of a way. I was sitting in traffic and catching every red light, and I was trying to think of a way to make it funny, and I couldn't even do that. I was so pissed. I couldn't. My brain was like, "All right." I got to my car, and there was a bear there, and I had to coax him out. There was a prostitute there, and I had to get her out. And there was a hillbilly there. His name was Stumpy, and he comes in from the hills when he hears banjo music. So he was camped out in my car. I couldn't even think of anything.
That's great. Hey, I want to read you something, by the way. I want to talk about
Steve. How are you?
Oh, I'm good, Lee. Good to hear from you. Good to hear from you.
Everything you shucking and jiving there, brother?
Oh yeah, moving and shaking. I actually. Could be employed with a Polish television station here in Chicago.
Pole Vision. It sounds like the best strip club ever.
Sounds like that Atari game. Pole Position.
They give
I had such questions like, do you speak Polish, and what are your live broadcast experiences? So,
and why do you speak Polish?
Well, I have a feeling because they needed an editor, so I have a feeling all of my footage is going to be in Polish. So, it'll be like when I edited videos for our shit back in the summer. You know, I needed to know Polish then, so I'm perfect.
It was nice having an editor.
Right, you needed a translator for Lenny and Pat.
Yeah.
And Terza.
I did, yes. Because they all speak food.
Yeah. So I want to read my Roger Ebert oops of the week.
Oh, man.
Yes.
Roger gets a lot of things right, but I love when he gets them wrong. And
yeah.
Here is a review he wrote about The Lonely Guy, and this is what he had to say about Steve Martin. The Lonely Guy is the kind of movie that seems to have been made to play in empty theaters on overcast January afternoons. It stars Steve Martin, an actor who inspires in me the same feelings that fingernails on a blackboard inspire in other people.
What?
He hated Steve Martin at one point in time. Hated him. He thought he was a terrible, terrible, annoying actor.
People said that about Jim Carrey, though.
Right. So, I mean,
remember what Siskel said about Jim Carrey?
Oh, Siskel hated him.
Yeah.
Siskel hated him. And he hated Farley, too. So, but I just love stuff like this because we read a couple weeks ago about how Ebert he thought Simon and Garfunkel were going to go nowhere. That soundtrack to The Graduate was awful.
Right.
So, this was my Ebert oops of the week. Steve Martin, not a good actor.
Yeah.
Oops.
By the way, Matt and I love Ebert.
We love him.
Yeah.
We love him. They're always our first review to go to.
Been reading him my whole life.
I think if Roger heard this segment, he'd think it's funny.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah,
I hope
he would. I think Roger knows he's been wrong about a few things.
I think he has a good sense of humor.
He does. He probably flipped me the bird, but he'll claim it's part of the humor.
Right.
He'll be like, oh, yeah, I was just a part of the show.
You can still flip the bird.
Oh, it shows how much you like Ebert.
Oh, I love Ebert.
Oh, yeah, you love him.
Hey, if your middle finger goes, pull the plug on me. He's doing good.
So, Steve, how you doing, pal? Everything else is good?
Wait, man.
Talk about the interview. You and Lee heard it. Give me your guys' thoughts on Frank Grillo, man. And, I mean, The Gray is fantastic, and Warrior was good in Warrior. He was really good in Warrior.
He was,
and,
yeah.
What's your thoughts on the interview? What's your take from it?
The first thing that stuck out to me was I loved the John Cazale. That was, to me, I'm like, oh, man, this is going to be a good interview because he was loving that comment, and then just that the two of you kind of acknowledged that a movie can provoke such
great conversation via religion and politics, and that's even better. When an interview can provoke thought like that, now you know you're doing something right.
No, that's good. That's good. Lee, did you hear anything that you took from Frank? And
the thing I heard when I first sat down was you talking about people who didn't like the movie, which is fine. That's their opinion, is their own.
Sure.
But why they didn't like it, which is because it didn't do exactly what they thought it should do. And I think that's a very – I would have asked the very depressing trend in recent years of people who look at entertainment as a distraction.
Yeah.
Essentially, and don't really – and I'm not saying anybody specifically, but grow up. Really grow up. And would you – these are – I imagine people who need movies to always be uplifting experiences – and who don't and who can't separate the content from the context or the craft, and who can't really just are level one movie viewers, and most and many people are. It's not a bad thing
to be a level one movie reviewer. I do get annoyed that there's a closed-mindedness. Like I told you the other day, the first thing I'll say to someone is, hey, I want to show you this film from the 70s.
Right.
And they already look disgusted and bored and freaked out. And it's like,
right.
Oh, dude, it's Jaws.
And
calm down.
It's not just that if they perceive it to be arty, they won't give it a chance. It's what they perceive to be arty.
We got a phone call. Do we want
which
to take
it? Which is really – can I say one thing? If you always
– yeah.
If you like – if you have tastes that are narrow and facile – and shallow in cinema, that's fine. It's just you will never have a deep experience at the movies. If that's all that you want, then you will never get lifted up to the heights that where cinema can take you. And fiction and literature and theater for that matter. I mean, would you have in your house hanging on your wall just portraits of people, or are these going to be the same kind of people who like it's a painting of a bunch of lines and stuff? You know, I'd prefer it to pour because you know what the thing is. It's an Irish man with a dog. Or is that an abstraction?
No, I hear you.
Take your call.
Steve, are you awake?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, all right. What's with this inspirational show today?
Downbeat ending, man. I don't know. Sweet. What happened to your call?
Oh, wait. Well, I think they dropped out during your spiel. Hello? You're on the Matthew Aaron Show. Who's this?
Hello?
Oh, it's Louise. Yeah. Hey,
no.
Alex. How you doing?
Not much.
I had a feeling it was you.
Hey, Alex, Louise.
I had a feeling. I know your number by heart now. I don't have to ignore everyone else's phone calls. I just ignore yours. So what's going on?
I might be making a surprise trip out there in a week.
Well, the surprise is going to be where I don't tell you where I live. That's going to be the surprise.
The surprise is when you find out what you're going to be sleeping on.
Hey, surprise.
Or what you're sleeping with. Why aren't you coming out with Lenny in April? What's the deal with that trip being planned or not being planned well?
It's still in discussion. I think we're going to...
Lenny's booking tonight. Lenny's booking today.
Okay, well, then I'm in.
Well, you need to talk to him because I don't think he tells people anything.
No, he's last minute, but there's a dinner, Mike's birthday dinner Saturday. We'll have a discussion.
Oh, Terzo gets a birthday dinner?
I think he gave himself a birthday dinner.
I read on his Facebook that he went to Gioco.
Yeah, but Terzo has seven birthday dinners. He has one for every day of the birthday week.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he has seven birthday breakfasts, seven or eight birthday lunches, seven birthday dinners. You should have never brought up Terzo's name. Mikey.
How's it going, guys?
Oh, he's there. He is.
Oh, his ears were burning.
Mr. Luisi. Well, you may have something to talk about, I guess, huh?
What are we talking about?
Oh, Alex is terrified. What are you talking about, Mikey?
I guess we'll have to find out on Saturday. You know, you're gonna you better be showing up. That's on Saturday. I had to get the reservations. It took me a lot of work to do that.
Well, is it gonna be just me and you, or what?
If that's the case, you better be buying.
Oh, man. Okay. If it's fish and he has red wine, look out, Luis. You're going to get poisoned.
Oh, yeah.
Like it's this old spy novel.
I got to pull a second mortgage out to pay for the wine.
Hey, Terzo, how the where fuck are you drinking eat? Johnny Blue Bottle Service the other night?
Well, I was with a friend of mine who had a friend in from out of town. He actually, well, he's from Spain, and he owns a bunch of nightclubs, and he's got one down in Miami. So they, you know, he was playing on full tilt, and he actually how this happened was is get this so we go over to the pump room, and we're just trying to sit down and have a drink, and I'm not like, look, I don't want nothing. He's like, thank you, and. He's like, no, I'll get you something. I'm like, all right. He's like, well, I'm getting a Johnny Walker Blue and soda. And I'm like, well, he's like, I'll get you one of those. I'm like, all right, fine. So I'm like, that sounds good. Well, next thing I know, you know, he gets up and he goes and was running around talking to the server. I'm sitting there talking to my buddy. And he comes back and sits down. And then next thing I know, this girl comes by, drops down a bucket of ice and puts this bottle
what
up.
What say? Are you
say what?
Are you at the video arcade playing Cruising USA?
No, I'm driving right now.
Through a drive?
In any event, so this guy drops an entire liter bottle of Johnny Blue on the table. I go, what the hell is this? He goes, the one they had at the bar, it was already open, so I have him bring us a fresh bottle. I'm like, oh, what the fuck? So that was all right.
Iranian? What was that impression of?
I bring fresh bottle
of your Johnny Walker.
Of Johnny Blue.
Hey, Terzo. Caesar wanted to know if you're driving a forklift with that beeping sound.
Hold on, guys. I got to back the garbage truck up.
So, Mikey, where are you going to dinner?
We're going to dinner at Piccolo Sonia on Grand Halstead. It's a fantastic restaurant. And I figure when we're done, we get food drunk stumblers.
Here you go with the Pico de Sonio.
You've never even been there. It was good. I went to Joko's the other night and had Gaetano service dinner. It was good.
Yeah,
Hey Matt, I gotta get going. I just wanted to say, hey, that this guy you guys had on, Frank, was amazing. He's a great talker, and you gotta keep in contact with this guy. He was great.
Yeah, he's the best.
Didn't he just sound like he was more physically fit than Matt and I put together?
Yes. Hey, right. Terzo, did you say hi to Steve? Steve, did you say hi to Terzo? Steve, what happened to you? Steve?
I'm here. I was being a good audience member.
Whoa, tell him out. Do we have Steve the Stump on the air?
Yes, Steve.
We do have Steve the Stump, and I'm still stumpy.
Well, isn't this special? I was unaware that he was off hiatus status. Oh, yeah.
Hey, Terzo, are you now that you're getting Johnny Walker Blue service and going out to dinner 7 days a week, I'm not expecting to see you in April, am I?
Well, Matt, the other night it cost me an entire day of about $49, so I'd say I'd do all right, and 30 of it was ballet.
That's pretty good, pal. That's pretty good.
Gioco, my old meat store. My old haunt, Olympia Meat Packers, supplies their meat. So I made some deliveries.
Over on South Wabash?
Yeah.
Yeah, they got a new head chef, Gaetano. I mean, he did a five-course for us, and it was very good. And, you know, he's from around Napoli, and he was an all right guy. You know, he picked out the entire dinner for us, and it was good, but... It just, for the amount of money, and it just, nothing really wowed me. The only thing that was unbelievable was the sea bass. And you know, I found out that I got a half an order, and if I got a full order, I mean, I could have snorted. It just was not going to be, I just, you know, not in the right place. But I shouldn't say it's a bad restaurant, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah. It's not the best, though. I shouldn't recommend it to everyone, or what?
No, I mean it's worth an experience, but I just don't know if it's one of those places that make you want to keep coming back. But again, for me personally, understanding restaurant and industry, I mean, although I did have the chef pick out and, you know, service, so I figured he'd do his highlight dishes. But usually I got to go 2-3 times before I make a complete judgment. But all first impression, nothing bad, but it's about 15% more than it should be, especially for not being in a high rent district. And you know, frankly. There was nothing that really, you know, made my taste buds go, wow. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Pat Bruno over here.
You know what makes me miss home? What really makes me miss Chicago is when we used to do the show back home, and you'd hear this for like 10 times in a show.
Yeah, what happened to all that? Are we too good for that now?
We're not. Freaks on the China, never had them before. Do, do, who cares? Do, 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 do. Drop kick your jacket as you came through the door. No one glares. Sometimes you just turn around and no one's there. I love Chris Hewitt.
Yeah.
I just got back from McDonald's. I walked into the dealership.
What is with you and the McDonald's, Mikey? You're there as much as I am. As I said,
you know, it's not. I'm eating the chicken. I got the chicken sandwich with no mayonnaise. It sucks. You know how much I wanted to get like two double cheeseburgers with Big Mac sauce on it and something like that. You know. Yeah.
Well, I admire your restraint.
Yeah, wait, you're dieting, really?
Oh, I've been on diet since I got back. I had to. I told you. That was why I was eating so much in L.A. It was my body's way of knowing that I was about to not eat as much as I like.
Yeah. How's it going? You losing weight?
Oh, yeah, I'm down about 12 pounds.
That's good.
12 pounds.
That's all right.
Keep it up, buddy. For how long?
Well,
how long have you been dieting, Mikey?
3 weeks.
So you're telling me pretty soon you are no longer going to look like Belvedere. Survival. Life is more than mere survival.
He doesn't look like Belvedere.
No. But can I look
like... Who the hell is Belvedere?
Can I look like Bob Uecker a little?
Hey, guys, I gotta let you all go. Lee, good hearing from all you guys again. I won't be a stranger.
Good hearing
all
from
right.
you, Steve.
Bye, Steve.
Good day.
Okay, now you can gossip, Terzo. Steve's gone.
What the fuck was that all about?
What do you mean, what the fuck was that all about?
Well, all of a sudden, Stump to Steve, decides that, I just don't understand what,
I called him the other day. We're good in the hood. Everything's okay.
Why shouldn't have everything be okay before?
Well, you know why.
Well, yeah. Is it going to be one of those shows? This is a very special show.
Okay, now people are going to be confused. Here's right. what happened. All Steve right. moved out to L.A., as people know. Then Steve had a situation with Mother Government where he had to leave. And it did kind of put us in a hole a little bit and throw off some plans.
Dog the Bounty Hunter captured him and returned him back to Cook County.
And what happened was I was mad for like a month and a half. I talked about it with my dad. And hold on, I'm going through my files right now on this story. My dad and I, we were like, Steve's a good guy. He's always been there, as a friend, and he works hard, and everyone deserves, help. And people screw up, and that happens. And that's life.
Deserve help if they care and if they're trying.
Yeah, if they're good people.
Wait, so you started, you stopped talking to him because you were angry at him?
I was angry he left, yeah. I don't know if at him, at the situation.
At the situation.
Yeah.
Because I hate that show.
Yeah.
But when I got here, it had just happened, and it was for chaos when I first moved here.
Yeah, and then I decided to call him this week. I said, you know what, sleeping dogs lie. I don't want to hold grudges,
Oh, I thought he just wasn't picking up your phone calls.
Well, you know me, Mikey. I don't hold grudges.
No, well, that's all right.
I don't hold grudges.
I'll tell you what, though. Is he still writing a book?
Yes, he is still writing a book, but it's all positive from what I'm told.
Hmm.
Well, he better be real careful that I can't find him if I read that and find something I don't like.
Oh, Mikey, he likes you. Come on. Don't be paranoid.
Well, I'm not saying about something about me.
Oh.
Something about anybody they don't like.
Oh.
Hey, we had Luisi on. Luisi was supposed to move out here and fell through, and it was a big deal, and we were scrambling for a while.
Yeah.
And I was mad at Alex for a while, but you know what? Got over it,
Well, we dealt with it. I was mad. Listen, I'm not going to lie. I was mad at both Steve and Alex about that. But
yeah, so what else is going on, Mikey? You're not coming out here anytime soon, huh? I'm going to have to... I have to sell something so I can come back and hang out with you.
Say what? No, I'm sorry. This is one of my other sales bills just walked. I'm on the radio right now, John. By the way, you owe me another dollar. Yeah. I'm not. This isn't a negotiation. Don't start that again. Any event.
But yeah, they, you know, and yeah, I'm not coming out. I'm having a good time. I'm trying to work my ass off. Car business is kind of slow. Got a lot of nickel dicks coming in right now. And, you know, trying to get some things going, trying to get some stuff happening. You know how it goes. You know, here in Chicago, got to keep hustling. It ain't like these lazy bags out there in L.A.
Oh, man, I'd like to thank David Mamet for that last bit of dialogue.
Oh.
That was good.
Well, I can't say I disagree.
Well, hey, let me put it to you this way. If anybody out there in L.A. is listening, okay, if you're not from L.A., like Mr. Binder or something, you're probably agreeing with this, miss, but no offense to anybody out there, but I work when it's raining outside. Get that, huh? Isn't that a fucking flash in the pan? Oh, my goodness. You know, that's just, that's almost revolutionary. And actually, you know what? Sometimes I don't take lunch, and then sometimes I might work and actually work 12 hours in a day. I know it's unbelievable for these people out in L.A., but it actually does happen.
Oh, I'm glad I don't give out that guest call-in number.
Better sweep that cutting room floor. No, that, you know what? That Midwest work ethic, you can tell out here, Mikey, who has it and who doesn't. Those people that are really committed. And
Mikey's not totally off, though, because... Like, I work my ass off out here, and I know Mike Binder does, too. He's always right. Him and I are always doing stuff. And, you know, we're always frustrated. Things aren't going quick enough, because that's just the business out here. And, like, you're just like, but you're looking at the people that make the business happen.
Right, and those
people. And
you're
like, why are you, is this your third hour of lunch? I've walked by this place three times, and you've still been here. Like, shouldn't you be at work?
Yeah.
I don't know, man. Mikey's right about that. He is.
Hey, whatever. It is what it is. But maybe it's just the nature of the LA experience, I guess.
I either have to, either Wingmen's got to sell soon or my show at Comedy Central has to get made, or else you got to come visit me.
Well, you know, how's that whole thing going, by the way?
That I could talk about on the air. I'm putting together a treatment right now for Comedy Central, and I'm going to pitch it. I can't really talk about the show per se, but it's up their alley, and I think their audience would respond to it. And Wingmen's going all right. There's a lot of people interested in it, surprisingly. But I mean, these things just take time. Not surprisingly, I think it's a good script. Actually, it's the first script I've ever written that I've been really, really proud of on my own. That was my own script, and I'm really fucking proud of it. It's funny. It's a good movie, and it's got some.
So I know this is an ongoing process, but are you pretty much done rewriting Wingmen?
Yeah, that finished last week until someone picks it up and wants a rewrite. So until I get paid to rewrite it at this point, or I get paid for the script, I'm not rewriting it. It's done, and it's good. It's good.
Okay. So let me ask you, so how does this process work? I mean, you write a script, you guys are finally done writing it, and now do you guys try to make calls to these companies and really pitch this script? Or how are you going to go about that process of getting it bought?
Well, first, you know, you send it to the people you network with and that want to read it, like friends and people that have done the show that like you a lot or people I hang out with, whatever. And then I send it to my manager. I send it to Mike and I, Mike Binder, who's been helping me out. We put together a game plan and get out. But I'm very lucky that Mike's been helping me and that I've met Mike because, you know, things like this are – it's hard to write a script. I know we have a lot of people that listen from back home. They're comedians and stuff. It's not as easy as writing a script and then just sending it around. And you do – in order for it to happen quicker – and maybe better, you need to know people, you know? You really do. And you need to meet people, and that's how you get to know people. And, you know, there's no definitive process to it. There's no rules out here. But the way I'm doing it is, yes, I'm lucky enough that certain people are willing to help me out with it. So Mikey, I'll call you later tonight. I'm going to wrap up the show.
Sounds good, Val. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, thank you to Frank Grillo, at Frank Grillo on Twitter. The Gray is now in theaters. Warrior you can watch on Netflix, Amazon Stream. I watched it on Cinema Now yesterday. You can rent it, I'm sure, from places that have rentals still. You can buy it at Best Buy, whatever. Frank's great in it. Nick Nolte's great in it. The Gray is a phenomenal movie, and you should go check it out.
Right.
And it's in theaters now, and look for, like, 28 Frank Grillo movies in the next 12 months.
Yeah.
So good for him. I'm so proud of him. He's a great actor. And you know what? He's right. I am a cheerleader. Cheerleader for him and Joe.
Yeah, he was just terrific in that.
I may not be in their tribe, but they're in my tribe.
Yeah, they're
good guys. So, you know, I got their backs. And all right, so thank you very much. And Lee and I will be back next week with new guests. I'm gonna go see Chronicle tonight at midnight. So I'll look for my review of that next week. And Lee, I'm sure, will talk about it as well. I'm looking forward to watching that tonight as a regular moviegoer. No screening. Nothing. I'm going to the midnight show. I'm plopping down $12
with the rest of the slime balls.
Yeah, with the rest of the assholes. So thank you very much, and I will see you guys next week.